हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनाभुनक्थु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्तिश्शान्तिश्शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्य प्रभुनित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे प्रभुपाद की ओके सो कंटिन्यू सक्रिय सार्दीपिका देन विद द फर्दर डिटेल्स इन वासुदेव अर्चनम अबाउट हाउ No demigods are worshipped, and how one should just worship the Supreme Lord and the devotees, and by that all the benefits that you would get, and more means beyond means you would get all the that you would be getting the devotional benefits at the same time whatever you would get from worshiping the demigods is also included. So then this is after the Matriganas, then the next is the devotee of Lord Gopala will also worship the cowherd friends of the Lord, in particular Sri Dham, etc. In every function, the devotee of Sri Krishna will worship Lord Krishna and his dearest sakis, such as Lalita, etc. The devotee of Sri Krishna with great intelligence should worship these Vaishnavas according to the proper scriptural rules and should never worship the primary or secondary demigods. Right. So, in other words, all the demigods, whatever they are, whether they're, Brahma and Shiva aspects, or whether you're dealing with the Dikpalas, like that of, Indra, Varuna, Kuvera, Yama, and whoever else will come in there, and then as you go down, just in other words, no demigods are worshipped. So you're going to worship the Lord with his closest associates. These rituals that are performed by the devotees are in the mode of goodness. They are not in the modes of passion and ignorance, unlike the so-called religious books of the atheists, demigod worshippers. Right, so when you say atheists, then it means you don't accept the Supreme Lord. And you're not accepting that it's he's actually in charge. He's the source of everything, and all the potencies that everything functions on are coming from him. You're thinking that the demigod themselves is actually providing this. But they can't function separately, just like you can't go to a government minister and try to get something from him that the prime minister themselves or the king doesn't approve of. Right? So that's the whole idea. If you're going to them and thinking that it's separate, then you're not understanding actually what's happening. And so therefore, then, it's considered wrong, because we have to remember the material world's purpose is to raise the consciousness of the living entity and go back to Godhead, go back to our natural constitutional position. So therefore, anything that compromises that, then that's wrong, right? Then that's considered sinful. So that's why then the worship of the demigods is considered, would be considered sinful on the platform of what's the actual purpose and nature of the soul. Right, within the material, mundane context, they'll be considered pious. And why is it pious? Because at least you're following the rules of the Vedas, in that you're appreciating that you're respecting authority, you're doing your duties and respecting, appreciating what they're providing, the services that they're providing, that there's a greater authority than yourself. Then you're applying those within the context of your particular situation. So like this, you're following many of the rules of the Lord, but they're all secondary rules. So the point is, secondary only has value when it's connected to the primary. Right? Let's say, just like I set up the table. Right? It's all nicely done, set up, nice tablecloth, all the plates are out, all the cutlery is out, the cups and everything are out. And glasses and all that, I put out, salt, pepper, there might even be some other, condiments there, you know, like this and that and everything. And then I invite everybody, napkins, the whole thing's there. You know, I put maybe even candles, and the lighting is nice like that, put on some pleasant, you know, proper, appropriate music, invite everyone in to come and sit down. And then they all come and sit down and all that. And then what do you expect? What would be expected by all these people who came and sat down? There's going to be a meal. Yeah. So, but you can say is no, but I've set up all the arrangements that go with and make the meal wonderful. But without the meal, they don't have any meaning. You know, like that. So that's the whole point. And if you got the food itself, even if you didn't have all those arrangements, you just put it on a paper plate and you had to hold it in your hand, you'd be fine. You got something to eat. But if we took you into the fanciest, you know, restaurant that there is, you know, Michelin 3-star, and that's the only arrangement you've got, no food, you would not be satisfied. So that's the whole point, is all these different rules and all that are nice when they're in line with. So therefore, at least those people who are willing to set up the table and, you know, put the forks in the right place and the knives in the right place and everything, then they get more benefit. Now, let's say they don't want to do that. Oh, we don't care for all this tradition. We'll do it any way we like. But at least if they're trying to set up the table, which is something that you're supposed to do before eating, then they'll get some benefit from that. But it'll be very less. It'll be less than those who, no, the forks go this side and the spoons that side and the knives over here and like this and that. And here's where the glass goes and all those things like that. Then at least they're following the rules of the etiquette, you know. But the point is that, but they're only following that for their own purpose. So it's not actually in line with the food. So as you go down, and then those who don't care about that at all and just do whatever they want, or even people, let's say, set those things up, you know, nicely the table, and then they come in and pull out the tablecloth and everything goes on the floor, just creates trouble and all that, then these are just demons. Because they just disrupt society. Like that. So the whole point is that, you know, there must be rules followed, right? If you don't follow God's rules in connection with pleasing God, at least you follow them because God gave them, right? Because so many, those in the Vedic fold, and they will, they'll follow. They know that Vishnu is the supreme. And so they follow the laws that are there in connection that he's given, but not for the purpose of pleasing him, just that we follow his rules and he's happy from that and I get the benefits. But it's not about pleasing him as a person. It's just about following the rules that he'll be pleased to give us that benefit. So as this comes down, then it'll be, you're accepting it because it's God. Then you may accept it because, you know, okay, this is what traditionally we've done. You know, so it's kind of connected with the manomoy, but not exactly. It's a little bit more pranamoy, looking at it more socially and all that. Then there's others that, oh, it's just something, yes, that we do as Hindus, but, you know, they don't know why, don't have any real faith in it. That'll be down in the pranamoy, but it's better than those who don't. And then as it goes down, so even in anamoy, if you have a thing is, yes, you know, you have a something that you do, you know, you put a coaster under the glass on the table, you know, because otherwise it makes rings. So then at least you're following that rule. You get a little benefit for that by considering that leaving rings on a fancy wooden table, you know, by a watermark is not good. So therefore you put the coaster down to put the glass on so you don't get that effect. And so at least you're acknowledging the laws governing, you know, the aesthetics and the quality and appreciation of the wood and the work gone into it and that. So then if you don't put the coasting, just put the thing on there, then that will be considered bad. Right? So in other words, for Krishna, that there's any regulation is always an improvement for the living entity. So that's why you see even the animals, then, because now they work simply under the modes. They don't have that free choice as such as what they're doing. They're just going to act according to the modes. Different things will be put up and they'll go through a series of experiences according to their previous karma. But you see that they're regulated. They have places they live, food they eat, things they do, and they don't go outside of that, you know? And so then that's the context, because regulation and that following the laws of nature, following Dharma, that's what's natural for the living entity. And then humans, they're supposed to do that voluntarily. So anything that does that will be better than not. But you have to know the hierarchy of what's better. You can't make them the same. You can't say, we're Westerners, so we follow Western etiquette, and that's as good as the Vedic. No, not on any day of the week, you know, or any week of the year, any year of the cycle of the 60-year cycle of the sun. No, never. It just doesn't happen. It's that there is a hierarchy, and that's given by God, and it's not up to us to speculate, oh, it doesn't matter, you know, So that's the whole point here, is that you have to understand that these demigods, that they are simply carrying out, you know, the duties and that in connection with their service to the Lord. And so to not recognize that position and all that of the Lord and just think that they're independent, then that's offensive. That's atheistic, right? Because theism means you understand there's God and all that. So whether you accept it as personal, whether you accept it as simply as God, or whether you accept it as Brahman, or even as you come down, okay, you know, laws of nature, you know, worship of nature like that, or social law, then, you know, as it goes down, you get less and less benefit, but still at least there's some regulation. But for Vaishnavas who are serious about worshiping the Lord and developing a relationship with the Lord, they know it's all coming from Him, so they don't get involved in these things. Okay. Then also in Padma Purana, the sage Bhrigu says to the Lord, O Hari, your form, nature, chastisement, mercy, tolerance, purity, and munificent qualities are all wonderful. O ocean of good qualities, your nature is auspicious and transcendental. When you are in the midst of all the demigods, they become insignificant. O Purushottama, you are the absolute truth, the supreme shelter, the Lord of the Brahmins. One should never worship any other god at any time, right? So this is Bhrigu, right? One of the sons of Brahma, one of the Prajapatis. And he's considered the best, you know, his line of the Brahmins is considered the best. O Purushottama, if someone worships demigods neglecting you, that person becomes a chandala and is deemed as most abominable in all the worlds, right? So here's another top place where it says they'll become a chandala. Right, because the chandala means that they're just low class. They're outside the Varnashram system. So if you don't follow this, then you end up in a non-Varnashram system. So yeah. So here then, you know, worships demigods neglecting you. So you may have instances where certain personalities are worshiped in connection with the Lord. But that's given whatever is given in the Pancharatra and that. So for us, then we have all ours, as you'll see, how all the different personalities are removed and replaced with where their potency comes from. In other words, Ganesh is there, but his potency comes from Vishwakshena. You know, and Vishwakshena is going to get that potency from the Lord. So therefore, then if you're worshiping the Lord, you're automatically getting that. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Maharaj?
Yes, please.
I just wanted to clarify, because on one hand, it seems like from Bhagavad Gita that if we worship demigods, we go to the planet of the demigods. But here it is mentioned that if we neglect the Lord, Supreme Lord, and worship the demigods, then we go to different species. We're not exactly going, for example, Indraloka, we're not going if we independently worship Indra. So how is it? Should we worship? I mean, I'm not asking for myself. I'm just trying to get a clear idea. If independent worship, will it actually bring the worshiper to the place that he wants to go?
The thing is, if he remembers Indra at the time of death, then he may go there.
Oh,
you know, but the point is that the demigods like Indra and all that, they're all devotees. In other words, they're neophyte devotees. In other words, devotees who are performing service for Krishna, and they want to serve Krishna in devotion, but that mixed feelings where they're very much worried about their material facilities and position and authority and, you know, all the nice things going on auspiciously in the material platform, then there's a good chance that they're going to be more worried about all those things. So then they'll go to the heavenly planets. They'll become those demigods. You know, that's why Indra and all of them, they're all devotees. So as soon as something goes wrong in the beginning, because of their pride, they think, yes, I can do this. You know, it's like you see with Dhritarasura. Indra then, when Dhritarasura comes, he's proud. He has his club and he's on his elephant, Indra. And he goes out and he throws his club and Dhritarasura catches it with his left hand. You know, so that's generally considered an insult because the right hand's auspicious. You caught it with your left hand, meaning it's nothing. You caught it with that, you know. He's got this little club sticking out of his hand here, you know. And then he goes over to Indra and just goes, dook, and hits, you know, Airavata. And he goes back a huge amount of distance like that. And so, you know, this is what happens, is that the demigods go there, they shower all their weapons, and then he just swallows them. Then they go to the Lord. So in the beginning, they'll think, yeah, you know, I'm the big guy, I'm this, I'm in this position, that, I have this authority, this potency, I have this experience. If it works, then they continue on. You know, if it's favorable and all that, and then they do nicely. They're confident. Okay, great. But if they're proud, then you see that Krishna doesn't let anything happen. Then they have to turn to the Lord. And because they turn to the Lord when there's a problem, that's called Devata. That's called the Sura. Now, if you make your plan and it doesn't work, and then you just go to make another plan, that's called Asura. Means not Sura. Sura means they have faith in the Lord. Asura means they don't. You make your plan, oh, how we're going to do all this and all this social arrangements. It doesn't work. We make another plan. That's not Daiva. So we have to be able to appreciate the difference here. So when we're worshiping, like you see, we're going to worship Lord Shiva, we're going to worship Narad Muni, we're going to worship Brahma. But as devotees of the Lord, as servants of the Lord, and in the context of what's there. And so then that way, then, but it's about you worshiping the Supreme Lord and his associates. We're not just worshiping them. You know, this is not worship of Brahma. This is worship of Krishna. And as part of the either preliminary or the concluding activities, then we're worshiping the devotees. But, you know, they're just a few of all those who are beyond. So like you said, I worship Sri Krishna along with his dear Shakis such as Lalita, etc. Right? So all these different, and they're the source of the potency of all that. So Indra, his potency eventually will go back to Lakshmi. You know, like that. That's where he gets his potency from. Because you see, who's his consort is Dana Lakshmi, which is the material form of Lakshmi. You know, so when the materialists get money, they're getting from Dana Lakshmi, not from Vishnu's Lakshmi. The devotees are getting benefit from Vishnu's Lakshmi. Does that make sense?
Yes, thank you, Maharaj.
Yes. Yeah, so see, that's the whole point, is it's always in Achinta Veda Veda Tattva, there's going to be this fine point. It has a double position, because you can see it as the oneness, you can see it as the difference. So it's pointing out here is that things aren't seen in the context of its relationship with Krishna and how it's favorable and pleasing to Krishna, then it's just not done by devotees. That's how you decide. It's not that, can we worship demigods or not? But here we're worshiping Brahma. So you said we can't worship demigods. Then try to understand what you're dealing with here. What's important, the demigod or Krishna? So these kind of arguments means that ourself is what's important, not Krishna, because it's, I want to worship demigod to get this benefit. And you're saying not to worship. And that, okay, fine, we don't worship, we just worry. But why is it here in the puja and these technical points and we're worshiping? So that means I can worship. So we're just looking for an excuse to do what we like to get the benefits we want. So that kind of aspect, that is, you know, is deemed as most abominable in all the worlds. It's just like the demigods know that this is not how it works. You know, you're a demon, you're a materialist, you worship the demigods, you're already in the material world, controlled by the material world. So at least it's progressive within the mundane platform. But for devotees, is that the demigods wouldn't appreciate that the devotees are worshiping them and not worshiping Krishna. They wouldn't appreciate it. So how are you going to get benefit? So it's just not done, even though it's one of those things that devotees are dabbling in and thinking it's good, it's fun and all that kind of thing. But it doesn't work. It won't work for them. You can see, check their lives. Those ones who do that, how is it going? Is it stable? Is it steady? Are they progressing? Are they satisfied? No, you won't see that. Their minds will be disturbed. That's what it says, manorata. It's just the mind is just going. Only when Krishna is there in the center, then you can have that peaceful mind focused, everything, because then it's Krishna and everything else is connected around Krishna. So how much you require, what is your qualification, you can expand that to so much. But if it's that there's Krishna and then there's this and then there's that and all these things, it's always going to be an imbalance. Is that okay?
Yes, Maharaj. Thank you very much. It's clear now.
Okay. Jai Ho. Anything else? No? Okay. Then, yes. Oh, Janardana. This is continuing with Bhrigu Muni, isn't it? Janardana, those brahmanas well-versed in the scriptures worship only you and no other demigods, even though they appeared before you. Right? What we can say is that the demigods were already there and then Krishna came and performed his pastimes. And so that you could say, well, they're original, they're older. But the point is no, that doesn't mean, but their potency is coming from Krishna, right? Their expansions of Kiradakshai Vishnu, right? From Kiradakshai Vishnu is coming Brahma and Shiva. And then from them is coming all the others. And then all these things, and depending on the Shaktis, then all the directions, like the eight Shaktis, the main Shaktis, what you see is that in the Pancharatra, then they're all surrounding Lakshmi Narayan in the middle. So those Shaktis are expanding from Lakshmiji. And so they're in the different directions. So whoever's in the east, it's their potencies coming down and becomes Indra. Whoever's in the west, that you know, that particular Shakti of Krishna, then that becomes Varuna. The one in the south becomes Yama. The one in the north becomes Kuvera. You know, as it goes down the line. So that's the whole thing, is that it all comes from him there, but because he comes as a Leela avatar, he comes to perform a pastime. And so in many of them, they may be expanding from Kiradakshai Vishnu. But the point is Kiradakshai Vishnu is the source of everyone else. And most of these others are coming down, you know, one after another. Brahma was first, then like this. But here they're directly expanding from Kiradakshai Vishnu. And then when Krishna comes, he's not expanding from Kiradakshai Vishnu. You know, he expands at Balaram as Mahasankarshan, right? And then Mahasankarshan as Vasudev then as the second Chaturvyuha. From the second so then we get the Purusha avatars of the material world. So that makes sense? So that's why it says, even though they appeared before you, but the point is, Madhapur, they feared Krishna is already there. He's coming to perform his pastime. They're here because they have to be here. The conditioned souls that are then, you know, in some way working, applying their devotional service, or if there's mixed desires, then they're performing, you know, offices within the universal element, right? So we have to see is that, you know, as you put this and make management and these other things and knowledge and facilities and authority as the most prominent, and that's what's going to make the movement work nicely, and that's what's going to make bhakti flourish. That's the mentality of a demigod. It's not the mentality of a devotee. I mean, a mature devotee. It means demigods are devotees. So that's why you always have to see the primary as Krishna. That's why he always says him without any material worship. Him is the primary. It's always making the distinction between the primary and the secondary. Right? Okay. Other demigods such as Brahma and Rudra are not completely pure and are tainted by the modes of passion and ignorance. However, you are of pure goodness and therefore you are worshipable by them. Right? Because he is their source, because they've come to take care of the mode of passion and ignorance in the material world. So there's some taint, right? When you have Karanadakshay Vishnu, then you have the two features of Hiranyagarbha and Sadashiva. Those are untainted, but those are outside the material universe. They're the mood of I will create, I will destroy. So he's going to breathe out and glance, and all these things will create, and then he'll breathe back in and it'll all be destroyed. But once you come into the universe, then that feature of Hiranyagarbha or Brahma and Shiva and Rudra, that then has a taint. So that's where you can tell the difference. Water that has bathed your lotus feet should be taken, even by those ancestors living in the heavens, and definitely by all pious people living on the earth, to remove all the sins and attain liberation, right? So he's saying, water, bathe Krishna's feet, then even those who are coming from the heavenly planets and the forefathers and all them, they should take this, because it's not like, oh yeah, we're the superiors and there he's a junior and he's performing some ritual or some shraddh ceremony for them. No, he's the origin. And so therefore anything in connection with him, that should be accepted. Your remnant should be accepted even by the ancestors living in the heaven and by all pious people living on the earth, but the remnants of other persons should never be taken. So he's reiterating how important it is even by the ancestors, but remnants of other persons should never be taken, right? So it's only what's in connection with the Lord. Does that make sense? So remnants of the other demigods and this and that kind of aspect. Things such as food, flowers, water, and other items that are offered to the demigod should be considered as wine and must not be even touched, right? Because we see is that wine then is considered one of the mahapaps, you know, the alcohol, drinking alcohol. So just as it's in that category that anything it touches becomes impure, someone who drinks it becomes impure, all that, even one drop, you know, it's just considered no, like that. So like that, then we should see is that anything offered to the demigods is just not taken. You know, if you're at some kind of one of these Hindu Bindu ceremonies and that, they worship demigods or whatever it is, you're there for some, you know, to somebody and that, and they give you some prasad, just ask them if they could pack it, you know, like that. And then you take it, then you can feed it to some cows or something like that, but you don't eat it. Like that. Therefore, a knowledgeable Brahman always worships the eternal Lord and respects his Mahapushadam and the transcendental water that has bathed his feet. A Brahmana should not look at the other deities. A Brahmana should not look at the other deities, then you. Right? So in other words, when you're looking, you have the other demigods that look at Krishna. Then you might acknowledge that the others as servants of the Lord, but you're just respecting them as servants of the Lord. Right? Okay. Neither should he worship them, right? So he's not worshiping them as there. If you're worshiping the Lord, if you're in a temple where they're there and all that, then you're worshiping the Lord and they're then shown as devotees like as everybody else in the audience. You know, he should not partake of other remnants than yours, nor should he enter other temples. So you don't go into all these other temples. There's no need. In other words, you don't go in there to worship them and all that. Does that make sense? So on this is, you know, we might go and look at the architecture or something like that. We're trying to get some ideas or like this, but otherwise that's really not. That's why you see with these points here, in the Sri line, they don't go to the temples, they don't bow down to them, they don't look at them, nothing. And so it's authorized here to do like that. you know, to have that kind of a more, you know, very, very strict line. You know, and so you can say, as we're not so strict, but the point is we still don't worship them. It's just that we're just only worshiping Krishna. So we don't disrespect them. So the Shris don't disrespect them. They just don't interact at all. They don't look, they don't go, they're just neutral. Right? And so we may see them in the context as servants of the Lord, like the Madhvas. They'll see them all as whatever it is. You say Indra, it's actually the potency of Krishna to manage. So it's not the demigod. You're worshiping Krishna as Indra then points out in the Chandogya Upanishad, is you're supposed to worship Indra, meaning the original Indra means Krishna, not me. Because someone's asking Indra how to attain the transcendental position. He says you have to worship Indra, and he means you have to worship Krishna. He's the Indra. That Brahman who honors the forefathers by performing Shraddha rites, and who eats the remnants of the devatas instead of yours, and drinks the water that has washed their feet, accrues no merit whatsoever. It means what benefit you'll get. As a Brahmana, you're supposed to be knowing Brahman. What benefit you'll get on the Brahminical platform. That Brahman's forefathers remain in the hellish planets, submerged in lakes full of blood and pus for thousands of millions of years, right? So in other words, a long time. You know, so when it says thousands of millions, that means billions. So you want to avoid that. You know, so Brahman's supposed to worship. So in other words, Brahmins should be moving forward to become Vaishnavs. That's the whole point. It means at any point someone should try to be a Vaishnav, but at least the Brahmin should be trying it, even if the others happen to be materialistic. Okay, it happens. But the Brahmin should be trying to move forward. That person who offers your remnants and sacrifice, right? So in other words, it does, so you can say, oh, but what about these Brahmins? You know, they have to worship the forefathers. Shastra says, the point is if they're worshiping Vishnu, the forefathers are taken care of, right? If he's not worshiping the Krishna, then he shouldn't be neglecting these duties. He then has to do these duties, but you can see is he's not going to get any real benefit from it. You just stay in the material world. That person who offers your remnants and sacrifice to the demigods and to the ancestors certainly receives infinite benefit, right? So now you worship Krishna, and you're worshiping Krishna to please Krishna, and then you have these other ceremonies to do. You perform those with the remnants of the Lord. You're not worshiping Krishna just so you can worship the forefathers and the demigods. You're worshiping Krishna to worship him, and the forefathers and demigods may be included in those who are connected with the Lord. Does that make sense? So unless it's, you know, at the time you have to do a Shraddha and the family's there and they expect, so you worship Vishnu first, take those remnants. You know, it's in other words, whatever puja your paraphernalia is supposed to be for the things that you require for the Shraddha rite, then you take it in the morning, then you worship the Lord Krishna with all those things and to his satisfaction, in his pleasure, then you take those and then do the Shraddha rites. Right? So that's how it would work, you know. Say with the demigods, if you have family that does that. If you don't have family that does that, you're devotees, then what's the need? You never have to do it. Therefore, you alone are worshipped by the Brahmanas and no other deity, right? So in other words, others are just worked as a matter of course, as part of some technical points of the ritual. And you can see as our acharyas have been so kind that they've gone through the shastras and brought out that what it is that we can do that we don't have to even follow those kind of aspects, even though we're worshiping Krishna and then offering things to the others. We don't have to worry about that. So when it comes to the debts, the five debts that one has by being born, you know, to the demigods, to the sages, to the living entities in general, to the Brahmins and to the general populace, then all these different aspects, our debt is paid by worshiping Krishna, right? So we're not from families that they are following these things and offering these things on a daily basis. that therefore then we're going to worship the Lord and then give these remnants to all these personalities. We just worship Krishna and, you know, his near and dear associates, and we're done. That makes sense. If, due to illusion, he offers worship to other gods, he, meaning the Brahman, is to be considered as an atheist. But he doesn't actually understand what's going on. He may say Vishnu's there and this and that, but he's not understanding the supremacy of Vishnu. So he's actually an atheist. Right? Does that make sense? So religiously, there's a similarity. Anybody who follows the Vedas, then religiously, then in general, they're on the same page. Details may be different on what they're doing, which Veda, which particular rituals and all that. But when it comes to philosophy, then they're atheists. Because religion is secondary. So when you see, that's how you can be on the platform of Mana Moy, that you're following all these rules, but still be an atheist. That's why, you know, so it's a theistic platform, but it doesn't mean you're a theist. You know, it's just like Hiranyakashipu goes to Brahma and does all the austerities and that and prayers and that to Brahma that are appropriate to get the benediction from Brahma, but it doesn't mean he's theistic. That's the platform of Mana Moy. But it doesn't mean it's he's theistic. Does that make sense? So that's the point is when it makes the distinction is there that he can be an atheist, though he's following a theistic system. That's why it's Mana Moy. It's not devotion. The devotees are situated in Vijnana Moy, that's on the platform of the soul. And then from there, they perform their devotional activities on Ananda Moy. But even if they're not necessarily absorbed like that, then they come down to Vijnana Moy. Right, that liberated platform. Then again, whenever they can, you know, worship Krishna, remember Krishna, chant his holy name, then they're functioning on that Anandamaya platform. Right? Yeah. Okay. You are Narayan, the Lord of Lakshmi, Vasudeva, the Eternal One. You are Vishnu, the All-Pervading One, the Super Soul, the Supreme Controller. You are the Lord of transcendental goodness, the worship of the Lord of the Brahmanas. You are worshipped by all the Brahmanas and the demigods by the quality of pure goodness. Right? So he's worshipped with pure goodness. Not just goodness that I'm doing it and try to get the, you know, that it's my duties and all that and, you know, try to get, you know, either liberated or anything like that. Thus, one attains the supreme and remains fixed in him. Right. So when you do all your worship and all your activities in connection with Krishna, then that brings you to that transcendental position and becomes fixed in him. It means it's not a temporary thing that I do the worship and then I go back to my mundane. I'm worshiping Krishna. I become fixed in him and it doesn't come. I don't come back. O Purushottama, the Brahmins who are engaged in your worship attain the supreme abode. But others did not. Of this, there is no doubt. Right? So here's a Prajapati. So they can see quite a bit. They're on Brahma Loka. They can see what happens in the rest of the universe. So he's pointing out the Brahmins engaged in your worship attain the supreme abode. Go back to Godhead. But others did not. They remain here. Of this, there is no doubt. It's not that, yeah, sometimes like that and not, so better to not take the chance. They're just saying, this is the way. That it is also stated in the Skanda Purana that Brahmana who knows the absolute truth and who is eternally situated on the platform of pure goodness only worships Govinda, the Lord of all the demigods, in his Nitya, Naimitika, and Kamya pujas. If he, due to illusion, worships demigods, he becomes a Chandala. Right? So again, here, Skanda Purana, everybody's mentioning this point. So it's not that they're just saying it, just meaning, this is not good. It means that, but they're pointing out is kind of Chandala, right? The Chandala is not interested in these things. He's not following the Vedic and he's a meat eater. So, you know, he's a nice combination of the Malecha and the Yavana, right? You know, that perfect balance. Yeah. So even he has, as a householder may have, his Nitya Naimittik and Kamika Puja, still he's just worshiping the Supreme Lord. Like that. And then you'll see it's also pointed out that the devotee isn't interested in these, because for him it's not actually Nitya Naimittik and Kamika Pujas. He's just worshiping Krishna, and whatever his duties are in the context that he's in, then therefore he worships. So therefore, if you're doing it like this, worshiping Krishna, even if you're following Varna Ashram, it's Daiva Varna Ashram in the mood. But then in Daiva Varna Ashram, you know, directly, is we don't have to do all those things. The Nitya Naimittik and Kamika Pujas, we don't have to do. We're just worshiping Krishna. And so we save that. So that's why you see in the Bhagavatam, like in the sixth canto, then you'll see that there's those, you know, and it's listing off all the different kings and great personalities. Then you see some details where it's talking about how the king is doing these Nitya Naimittik and Kamika Pujas. But he's doing them in relationship to the Lord, like is being mentioned here. So he's trying to set example for the people in general that they have these desires and they may be worshiping someone other than the Lord. So he's showing them how they should be worshiping Krishna and then performing these in the context and doing these rituals in the context of this. Right? Does that make sense? But we see it's so nice that Srila Prabhupada and the Acharyas from Lord Chaitanya have saved us from all these technical points, and therefore we've been given the Daiva Varna Ashram. Like you see, even Lord Chaitanya, there's so many of these things as a householder that he's performing and doing, or so many of the details as the sannyasi that he's doing and things like that. So that the general public around, because you see is that the smartest, the non-devotee Brahmins and non-devotee, you know, kings and that general populace is quite prominent. And so therefore, then they're following all those duties, but they're doing all in line with Krishna. But we've been given by the Acharyas that we don't even have to worry about that level of detail. We just stick to the main items that are the Daiva Varna Ashram. So that's what's all explained in Prabhupada's books. Or if there's some more detail, he tells where to go. And using this mood, then you pick up what things work. The Brahma Vaibhartya Purana says, if out of great illusion and deep ignorance, a Brahmana willingly engages in the worship of the demigods and not Lord Vishnu, it will cause his downfall. All right, so if he willingly does, knowingly does, it'll cause his downfall. So therefore, he just avoids, you know, like that. So here's about a great illusion and deep ignorance, so that he just doesn't know who the Lord is. He doesn't know, or he doesn't care. It's not going to work out good. Krishna has to be the center. In the Uttara Gita says, O Kaunteya, worship only Vaishnavas. And never worship other deities like demigods, secondary demigods, yakshas, rakshasas, or ghosts. Right? So here he's pointing out that you just worship the devotees. Right? Because you can't worship the Lord alone. It has to be with his associates, but those associates are the devotees, not the demigods and everybody else. Also in the Brihad Vishnu Purana, if a Vaishnava or a Brahmana worships any non-Vaishnava demigod without me, he becomes a Chandala. Right? So another point. So we should kind of catch this Chandala thing is a standard issue here. So worship any non-Vaishnava demigod without me. So the point is you have to worship Krishna. And so even if you are obligated by your duties and you're attached to these duties, so it has that neophyte aspect, and you worship, but it has to be worship of Krishna, and then that remnants is you're honoring those personalities by the remnants of the Lord, like that. But the point is unless you're born in these families and from these families, then this point's not for you. You can say, oh, then it's all right. It says you're born in already in a Chandala family. Why do you think you're there? Why were you born there? Because you're inclined to worship the demigods and think that that's how you're going to get your stuff. You know, otherwise, why were you born there? Right? So then the point is that's not your duties. You can say is, oh, but it's that, but that's not your duties. Because you're only coming into the Vedic system through the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. You're getting initiated into the Brahma Gayatri, the Savitri, through the Maha Mantra. Therefore, for you, only the direct activities, it's the Bhagavat line. That's the line. It's only those that are directly connected. So we don't get involved in those. That makes sense. So it shouldn't be general devotees shouldn't be doing this. You know, and how many are coming from a smart Brahmin family that they are practicing and doing these things? Right? Very few. You know. All this evidence is easy to understand. Therefore, we have not explained it any further, as to do so would increase the size of the book. Further proof is also found in Srimad Bhagavatam 1:2:26-29. Those who are serious about liberation are certainly non-envious, and they respect all. Yet they reject the horrible and ghastly forms of the demigods and worship only the all-blissful forms of Lord Vishnu and his plenary portions. Those who are in the mode of passion and ignorance worship the forefathers, other living entities, and the demigods who are in charge of cosmic activities. For they are urged by a desire to be materially benefited with women, wealth, power, and progeny. In the revealed scriptures, the ultimate object of knowledge is Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead. The purpose of performing sacrifice is to please him. Yoga is for realizing him. All fruitive activities are ultimately rewarded by him only. That means ultimately by him only, not by unless he approves it, the demigod can't give it. He is supreme knowledge, and all severe austerities are performed to know him. Religion, dharma, is rendering loving service unto him. He is the supreme goal of life. Right? So that's that whole section, you know, that Vasudeva Paraveda, and that Vasudeva Paro Dharma, Vasudeva Paragatihi. Therefore, when worshipping Lord Vishnu, one should not begin by worshipping Ganesh and other devatas. Rather, one should perform Pancha Mahabhagavat Puja instead of installing and worshipping. One should perform Pancha Mahabhagavat Puja instead by installing worship of Sri Vishwakshena, Sanapa, Sanatana, Sanandana, and Sanat Kumara. Similarly, instead of worshipping the Navagrahas, one should worship Sri Kavi, Havya, Antariksha, and the other Nava Yogendras. Instead of doing puja to Indra and the Dikpalas, the Vaishnavas to worship the great devotees, namely Brahma, Sukadev, Sadashiva, Garuda, Narada, Kapila, Bali, Bhishma, Prahlada, Hanuman, Ambarisha, Janaka, Yamadev, Swayambhuva Manu, Uddhava, and Vyasa. In Satyayuga, how many is here? This is more, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. There's 16 here. So he's expanded because he mentioned them and other great devotees. Because it's the directions. You're doing the thing with the 10 directions, it'll be the 10. But if it's more than, I mean, if it's outside of that, then you're not doing the 10 directions, then in that way, physically, then you do all 16. In Satyayuga, Treta Yuga, Dwapara Yuga, and Kali Yuga, these Mahabhagavatas are always worshipped, right? So it's not just, oh, it's here at any time, they're worshipped. The devotees of the Lord substitute the worship of Gauri and the Matriganas with the worship of the Vaishnavis, namely, for example, Purnamasi, Lakshmi, Antaranga, Ganga, Yamuna, Gopi, Vrindavati, Gayatri, Tulasi, Saraswati, Prithivi, Go, Yashoda, Devahuti, Devaki, Rohini, Sita, Draupadi, Kunti, Rukmini, Satyabhama, Jambavati, Nagnajiti, Lakshmana, Kalindi, Padra, and Mitravinda. The devotees of Lord Gopal should also worship Sri Dhamma and the other cowherd boys. The devotee of Sri Radha Krishna should also worship the divine couple's intimate associates, such as Lalita and the other gopis. The devotee should worship Lord Sriman Narayana's expansions, such as Matsya, etc., and his respective Parshad devotees. Right? So who are the Parshads of Narayana? Like this, Lord Vasudeva and his devotees should be worshipped with 16, 12, 10, or 5 items. With the Purusha Shukta, page 64, prayers or other choice mantras from the Vedas or Agamas. In this way, the Brahmanas and household of Vaishnavas only worship the Supreme Lord in their daily activities, occasional activities, fruitive activities, and other auspicious rites. In other words, those things that are part of our duties, then we do all these things with the, just like, let's say one is doing the samskar. You want the benefit of that. So you can say in one sense it's kamika, but at the same time, it's also part of just the naimittic activities that are done by the, you know, followers of the Vedic culture. So they do all this with Krishna as the center and Krishna and the Vaishnavas. So in this way, their daily activities of daily activities, occasional and fruitive activities aren't actually that. They're all still just aspects of worship of the Lord. Secondary is still worship of the Lord. So that's where the Achinta Veda Veda Tattva aspect is. It's doing, but it's because it's connected with the Lord. It's not that, oh, it's all right. No, it's because it's worshiping the Lord. An expansion. So if you can't do your regular duties in connection with Krishna, how do you think you're going to do these in connection with Krishna? These are even farther removed, more detailed. They only worship the Lord's associates, such as Vishwakshena, etc., and never worship the demigods, not even in their dreams. Okay, how are we doing on time? Okay, so that then finishes the Vasudeva Archana. So he's showing there is that when you're worshiping that God, you know, that we saw in the very beginning, then he's giving all the points that are here that, you know, in worshiping, you should install a ghat in a beautiful mandala and put a copper plate on top and place a shaligram, then proceed to worship shaligram with the prayers, right, at a wedding or any other function, right? Lord Narayana or his shaligram should always be worshipped, right? Okay, it is an offense to devotional service in the holy name to worship Ganesh and other demigods such as the Pancha Devatas, Surya and the other planetary deities, Indra and the deities of the directions, Gauri and the Matrigans, etc. Instead, the Vaishnavas are worshipped. The evidence for this is in Padma Purana. So then part of that worship of the Gata and everything like that then is the worship of the devotees. So that's why then all this evidence is then given. Yeah. Good. So now we have the Vivaha. Karma is the first of the samskars. So that was all his introduction and the understanding of it, and then the preliminary activities where you're worshiping the Lord beforehand and the Lord's devotees, like that, to create the auspicious environment and the right devotional mood. Then, yes, somebody is speaking.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Ah, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna.
So the whole concept of worshipping the demigods, even for others, arise only because they have material desires, and
yes.
The thing is, they want to keep like fanning them.
Yes.
So only those who recognize the position of the Supreme Lord, but at the same time, if they have the material desires and they are fanning them along with it, they are the ones who are still considered civilized and stay in the realm of the demigods, or I mean Swarga, or even the earthly planets. But those who reject the authority of the Supreme Lord and think that they can make their own way, they are the ones who are condemned according to the Shastras, and they
yes.
go down.
Yes, so those very heavy things are mentioned there, the chandala and all that. But at the same time, it mentions Vaishnavas themselves don't worship the demigods other than in the context of worshiping the Lord.
Yeah, so for the Vaishnavas, because their goal is only to achieve pure devotional service to the Lord. And, you know, they don't have interest to pursue materially. That's why they go ahead. You're able to hear me? That's why then there is no concept of worshipping any other demigods independently or pleasing them arises. Is this in the proper line, Maharaj? That's how...
Yeah, yes, yes. You just have to make sure that in this, because people sometimes look for that little loophole, so does that mean we can worship demigods? No. You're worshiping Krishna and his associates. Whatever... Yes. Persons happen to be in the positions of demigods, but we're not worshiping as demigods. We're worshiping them as the Lord's associates. So those they're included there, like Brahma and Lord Shiva and Narad Muni and like this. So they're already included in the worship of the Lord. And so because we're doing technical rituals, they'll be more technical on how we're worshiping. And so there'll be, inclusion of these personalities. Does that make sense?
Yes, yes, Maharaj. So
yeah, but it has to be careful is that devotees aren't, the astrologer told me, oh, this planet's bad, so worship this planet and worship this demigod. No, we don't do that. We just worship Krishna, because the point is every planet, there's a lord of the planet. You're having a problem with Mars, it's Nrisinga, worship Nrisinga. You're having a problem with the moon, the worship of Aniruddha, or Krishna, you have a problem with the sun, worship Lord Ramachandra. You know, read those pastimes in Bhagavatam, chant those prayers like that. That's what you do. You don't go to the demigods like that. So it's not that if there's a loophole there. And if they say, no, but here with the temple, I can do the worship like that. It says, do you do the worship like that on all the things you do in your life? After every offering, when you're making the offering, then you're also then worshiping all those personalities, those demigods? No. You know, they're sitting down and going, how you say? This is one of the ones I heard of from L.A. back in the 80s, that devotees would sit down and go, rub-a-dub-dub, thanks for the grub. Yay, God. No, they cannot worship these personalities separately, because it's not part of the thing that they're doing. We're doing what we're given, and then if they happen to be in there, we're worshipped as the associates of the Lord. But if everything else in their life, because the point you want to worship that demigod, are you wearing a dhoti, tilak, sika, Brahmin thread, chanting your Gayatri regularly, chanting all your everything, doing all that, getting up in the morning, doing your all things, doing your Sandhi Bandana, all that. If you're doing that, then you could consider that, okay, I'm going to worship Krishna and then offer remnants to the demigods. But the point is where is that recommended for us? So it just won't happen. So we have to be very careful that people don't get the idea that they can worship.
Yes.
Because generally, most of the people who think they can, they're the ones that are unqualified to and should never even consider. And the ones that they themselves, as smartas, they are worshiping those demigods and they're following all the rituals for it. When you talk about this and tell this, they'll just go, okay, so now how do we do the worship? You know, if they have in their house a Shiva Linga or a temple of Durga, and that's the family, part of the family deities, to worship Vishnu and then take the remnants out and give them all. But they're already doing those things. You can't take people who are from the Chandala backgrounds and then now, no, you're qualified to chant. You're qualified to worship Krishna, which is the highest. You're not qualified to worship the demigods. Does that make sense?
Yes, Maharaj.
Yeah, so the point is that's why I say that we can't get all that. So all he's pointing out is all this is removed because there is the rules in the Vedic of doing that, worshiping them. But like you said, then there's those who are atheists, so then they doing these things, they're not going to get the great benefit. And then others who then they're doing because it's the family tradition, like that. Like you see is that there in Krishna's pastime, then Rukmini is going to the temple, Durga, because they do that before the wedding to get blessings. like that, because she's like the supreme married woman. So then like that, and then, you know, but it's part of the pastime, because it's there, then Krishna can go kidnap her there. So they're the ones that are only worshiping Krishna, but at the same time, because of the tradition they're following. Yes, Mr. K.C. Das.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, Jana Pranam. Am I audible? Hare Krishna.
Yes, Hare Krishna. I was just wondering why your answer was and question was in Bengali and spoken very quickly.
Sorry, Maharaj.
Oh, now it's a kid. Kids asking a question. It seems that you're quite busy right now.
Maharaj, I'm out on the road.
Okay.
Question is, Maharaj, that here it says, unless you are serving Lord Vishnu, you are basically a chandala. Our philosophy also explains that you don't need anything unless you're just chanting Hare Krishna and being happy. So what I'm realizing, Maharaj, that the position of a Vaishnava is not a very cheap thing as we take it.
Yes.
It is only if you are interested in going back to Godhead and being a serious devotee of Lord Krishna, only then can you be considered as a Vaishnava.
Yes. No, it's
would
right.
That be considered as a...
Yes, that would be correct. See, one has to appreciate that Lord Chaitanya's mission. Lord Chaitanya, then, you know, so many, you know, hundreds of thousands, millions of people, you know, that are involved. And then we see with the founder of Acharya, then how much it expands and how easily it's accessible to everyone. That's because of his potency, you know, channeling the Lord's potency. So we may take it as pretty ordinary that there's devotees, but it's not. They're so rare. Because when you count how many living entities there are, there's not a whole lot that are becoming devotees. Even if we say there's millions, there's that many in that termite hill that's eating all the wood in your house. There's a million of them. You know, one proper nest is like a million, you know, like that. A beehive is 10,000. A big beehive is like 10,000. You know, like that. Ants, you know, it's like that. So, and that's just all around your house. There's millions of living entities, and we're not even counting the worms and this and all the other bugs and this and that. So it's just like, you know, there's around, just in your house, around you, there's billions of living entities. And so, and then how many in that house? There's a few. And if they're devotees, that's very rare. So yes, you know, the Vaishnava, that's why the Vaishnavas are respected. That's why we're so careful about offense against Vaishnavas, because it's just so unique.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Okay. So we'll end here. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.